So it's the season of transition for many people, a time of endings and new beginnings, of graduation and commencement. Today, our bridging ceremony helped ritually mark that transition for some of our young people from youth to young adults. There's one thing that I would want to say to young people, one bit of wisdom that I wish I had taken to heart when I was just starting out. It would be, know thyself. I don't mean that we should endeavor to discover all of our proclivities and appetites so that we can list our likes and dislikes, our favorite foods and the music we like best, and our personality test scores on our online dating profile. What I'm talking about is deeper than that. It's about coming to know your own truest, highest self, your spiritual core, your indwelling divinity, the part of you that remains unchanged no matter what the circumstances. Get to know and come to trust that part of yourself, that seat of your wisdom. Lao Tzu said, "Mastering others is strength. Mastering yourself is true power." Who are you? What is truly important to you? What do you stand for? Why are you here? What is your unique contribution to the common good? What is your role in the evolution of consciousness? I know these are a lot of really intense questions, but I've found that, especially when I've come to a crossroads and I had to make a choice, that when I held these big questions close and allowed myself to be guided by the answers that arose, I tended to make better decisions. A few weeks ago, we all had the privilege of hearing some thoughts from most of the members of the YRUU, the youth group. And I was so impressed by the depth of self-inquiry and analysis that each student had so clearly done in understanding the cultural power dynamics and the privileges and disadvantages of their particular social location. I left the service feeling inspired and hopeful for the future. I will tell you that I have heard similar youth-led testimonial types of services at other congregations, and I will admit that on more than one occasion, I have come away feeling just a little bit horrified. It was alarming just to hear student after student stand at the pulpit and say not a whole lot more than, "I love this church because here we can believe whatever we want to." And I tried not to cringe visibly when I heard those words repeated. Yes, it is technically true that as Unitarian Universalists, we do not share a common theological doctrine. Some of us resonate more with the Christian teachings, the radical stories of love and liberation from the teacher, Jesus. Some of us are finding comfort and spiritual growth with a Buddhist meditation practice. Some would say they find meaning in some kind of force of consciousness that both transcends and unites humanity and all life. And they may or may not use the term God to name that. And some don't give the theology part much thought at all. They're here for the coffee. And by that, I mean they're here for a sense of community, connection, and shared purpose. I was so relieved to discover that the kids who grew up in this fellowship know that as Unitarian Universalists, we do have some core principles in common, and that these principles guide the meaning that we make in the world and help us to shape our responses to the world. Most other houses of worship are much more oriented than we are around a common religious beliefs and understandings of God and the role and meaning of their scriptures and their holy figures. Most of these religious organizations use these shared beliefs and understandings as a pole star to orient the members as they wrestle with the meaning of good and evil, of right and wrong. When she was the president of Star King School for the Ministry, the Unitarian Universalist seminary that I attended, the Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker wrote, It is important for us as Unitarian Universalists to remember that our religious heritage has consistently protested the image of God as a sanctioner of violence. Universalism proclaims that violence does not save the world. Our hope, rather, is in the creative activity of love. She goes on to talk some more specifically about love. She says, love is the active creative force that repairs life's injuries and brings new possibilities into being. Love speaks out in the face of injustice and oppression, calling leaders to account when policies and practices are injuring people. Love tends the wounds created by injustice and evil and offers compassion in the presence of life's suffering. Love builds communities of inclusion and friendship that break through the boundaries of prejudice and enmity. Love embraces the goodness of this world and seeks paradise on earth, a heaven of mutual respect. We are now living in a time when it is crucial that we learn to discern right and wrong, good and evil. To not only know it when we see it, but also to have the courage to name it out loud as the first step of resistance. And this is part of knowing oneself. I was raised in a good liberal household to believe in a degree of moral relativism, as in, there's no one objective truth, no absolute standard by which all behavior can be judged. But I'm beginning to see around the edges some pitfalls to such a relativism. We lose the vital capacity for the discernment of truth if we are solely committed to the fact that everyone's ideas and opinions have equal merit. The mainstream news has become so, quote, fair and balanced now that facts get equal time with fiction, if we're lucky. And now what is actually happening to real live people as a result of harmful public policy becomes obfuscated, blurred, drowned out by the pandemonium of the talking heads. The real danger is that when our eyes become so unfocused and we can't see the forces of evil for what they are, we will become unable to resist them. And I'm afraid that some of this has already happened, but it's not too late. We, as thoughtful, engaged citizens, need to be able to look at our society, look at our politics and our policies, and recognize that there are forces of evil, of division, of hatred, and fear, and there are also forces of good, of healing, and connection, and love. And there is a real and measurable difference. We religious liberals need to strengthen that muscle in order to bring some more acuity to our focus. Hannah Arendt was an author and political theorist from the last century who escaped the Holocaust and eventually became an American citizen. In 1951, she wrote a book called The Origins of Totalitarianism. You may have heard of it. It has recently come back on the bestseller list. Arendt wrote, "The sad truth is that most evil is done by people who never make up their minds to be good or evil." From an article on HuffPost, in her 1963 book, Eichmann in Jerusalem, Hannah Arendt reports on the trial of Adolf Eichmann, a German SS official who managed the logistics of the deportation of Jews to ghettos and concentration camps during World War II. Her portrayal of Eichmann is surprising. Rather than an evil monster, she describes him as terribly and terrifyingly normal. Arendt's observation of the coexistence of normality and bottomless cruelty in Eichmann led her to coin the term banality of evil. Under this lens, evil was not something incomprehensible and different, but something almost ordinary. We need to learn to see evil even when it sounds at first blush like it might be good public policy. I'm sure many good church-going German citizens thought that the rounding up of Jews and gays and people with disabilities made good political sense. Just like many do not bat an eye now when they hear about families being torn apart by our immigration enforcement, or about people fleeing war-torn or poverty-stricken countries being denied entry at the borders. We need to know ourselves and have the moral clarity and the courage to raise our voices in protest and refuse to comply with the forces of harm and hatred. I recently spent some time listening and watching videos of Reverend William Barber. He's the preacher who started the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina. I commend the videos to you. If you just do a search, he is a very powerful speaker, and I think he is one of the main leaders of our movement at the moment. In one of his sermons, he makes the powerful point that it is our duty to speak out, and he says, "How will the haters know that their hate is wrong unless we raise the word of God's love? The first thing is to dare to create a different conversation. How will those perpetrating injustice know they are perpetrating injustice if we don't talk about God's justice? How will those engaged in oppression know about deliverance if we don't talk about deliverance? How will those engaged in dividing God's family know anything about the beloved community if we don't talk about it?" I deeply appreciate his clear declaration that this is not about partisan politics. He says, if you think this is just a left versus right movement, you are missing the point. This is about the moral center. This is about our humanity. And I'll add, this is not about good people or bad people. Good and bad, evil and goodness run through every single human heart. But we need to get clear. What are you about? What side are you on? What inner guidance are you following? For Unitarian Universalists, the Standing on the Side of Love campaign was a powerful call to moral clarity and invigorated our movement. Without a religious creed to center us as a liberal faith community, we needed something to call us to stand in the moral center. We cannot agree on a name for God, or even if there is such a thing. But we have a shared understanding of what love stands for. Our corollary to the Christian question, what would Jesus do, is what would love do? I want to come to close by sharing some more of the words of Reverend Dr. William Barber. "It is a necessity for the destiny of our democracy that we realize that we have to look at public policy through the moral lens of justice for all and through the constitutional principle of the common good. Keeping hundreds of thousands of children from seeing a doctor when they are sick is not just bad policy, it is immoral. Kicking hardworking people who lost their jobs through no fault of their own off unemployment benefits to give tax cuts to the very wealthy is not just bad policy or Republican policy or Democratic policy, it is immoral. It is against the common good, and the people must raise a dissent. We must raise our moral dissent because it is our calling." He goes on, "If you've ever wondered why you were born for this season. If you've ever struggled for why am I here, you are here for this season. If you've ever wrestled with why has God given me the opportunity and the intellect and the ability to go the places that I go, it is for this moment to stand up and raise a moral dissent against the forces of injustice. It is our time. Others have stood, but it's our time now." It's time to get clear about who you are. What are you about? It's time to learn to see the malevolent forces at work in the world, even when the explanations seem terrifyingly normal. It's time to muster the courage in yourself and in one another to name evil and injustice and hatred to its face, even when your voice shakes. Because, my friends, we are all needed now in this love revolution. Amen and blessed be.